And we've got Greg Hunter this hour. We're going to take your calls. Even the Pope wants a one world currency now. What's that all about? We'll be back with Greg, your calls, and much more on Coast to Coast AM. Greg Hunter, what do you think of the Pope asking for a one world currency?
I think he should let what Caesar's be Caesar's and let what God's is God's. He shouldn't be weighing it.
but out of the economic business.
He should butt out of the economic business. Well, the reason we've got a big problem and the reason why a lot of people are mad at America is because, you know, we can print money, and that means we can print money to buy oil.
Anytime we want.
That's right. And the world has to have dollars to basically function. Most things are priced in dollars. Commodities are priced in dollars. Most accounts trade in dollars. But the world is trying to move away from that. China is trying to move away from that. Russia is trying to move away from that. They're trying to set up deals where they can trade in yuan. And Russia is trying to set up deals where they can trade to Europe in rubles. And, you know, they're wanting to get away from that. So it's not fair for America to be doing what it's doing. But, you know, we're to the victors of spoils. We won World War II. We have more nukes than everybody else. We are also a gold superpower, and I think if things get to the point where they think it's going to get bad, they'll have a new currency. It'll be partially backed by gold, maybe soft commodities, silver, farmland. I don't know, but I'll tell you one thing: the holder of the currency, when they revalue one, it's not going to be. You're not going to be richer. You're going to be poorer.
Okay, good point. Let's go to the phones. Driving around in Oregon, first time caller, Chris. Welcome to the show, Chris. Go ahead.
Yeah. Wondering what do you think would happen if they just started everybody fresh? It'd have to go straight down to the little guy, but all the forgive all the debt everywhere and just start anew.
Well, then the problem with that is that pension funds would be immediately broke, CalPERS would be broke, everything would be broke. I mean, and this is what Martin Armstrong is, of course, the economics, renowned economics professor. He also did some time in jail for very sordid and bizarre government prosecution. Some people say that they was wrongly imprisoned, and he was being in prison because he wouldn't play along with the CIA because he invented this theory of cycles. But, you know, Martin Armstrong is one of these scary, brilliant people. He's out of prison now. And if you want to read more about his woes, or his plight, and you can Google Martin Armstrong. There's a lot about it. I think he was unfairly imprisoned and held in contempt for longer than he was for the alleged charge, which he totally denies, that he did. But anyway, long and short of it, brilliant economist. He came up with this theory of cycles, and where, you know, that these cycles happen over and over again. It's a brilliant work, and he's been unbelievably uncanny about turning points in the economy. And, there was talk that the CIA wanted him to work for them because he came up with it. And basically the theory is about, different increments of time and what happens. Part of it is based on pi, 314. I don't want to get into the time, probably oversimplifying his work and not, doing it justice, but he could predict turning points in time by looking at this theory of cycles that he came up with. He also is a brilliant hedge fund and a manager and trader a worldwide global trader. And he thinks we are on the edge of the precipice of a financial Armageddon. That's his words. He said this like a few days ago.
Well, Gerald Celente thinks the same.
And he says that, listen, either we monetize this debt, and that includes Europe, or we default. And if you default, everything goes right down the tubes. Pension funds depend on sovereign
debt. They're not going to let that happen, Greg.
Well, and I think if they print the money, the other end of the spectrum is anybody who's holding currency, anybody who is a saver, they get hammered. They get killed. You monetize debt. Whoever holds that debt you're monetizing, they get poor because they lose the buying power of the money. It's like, hey, your accounts are insured to $100,000, now $250,000. Okay, Mr. Smith, we'll give you your money. We'll give everybody their money. Nobody will take a loss. But, you know, a loaf of bread is $15.50 and a gallon of gas is $22.40.
To the phones we go. Let's go to Fred in Flint in Michigan. Welcome to the show. Fred, I almost said Fred Flintstone. Go ahead. Good to have you.
That would be a fine compliment, George. No problem.
All right.
Greg, since 08, I've been hearing the mighty great guests of George's And, of course, I've heard Alex. And Webster Tarpley's been on the program, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like there's this really unholy alliance, if not a Luciferian alliance, between the Skull and Bones members that show up, you know, as Trilateral Commission people and
CFR,
Council on Foreign Relations, you know, Carnegie, Ford, Rockefeller Foundation. And then, you know, there's a book, Foundations of Power and Influence. And so in the bailout of 08, Congress the first week, end of September, said no way. Then Paulson shows up from Goldman Sachs as U.S. Treasury Secretary, says, aha, if you don't, there will be an economic meltdown, riots, and martial law. So then we see that the congressmen who voted for the bailout were probably the same congressmen, which is why I called, that apparently terminated the prohibition on derivatives, collateralized debt obligations, and credit default swaps that had been prohibited after or during the Great Depression, because apparently that was the primary causation for that depression. So suddenly Reagan, you know, terminates the prohibition. Then Clinton comes along and does away with Glass-Steagall. And then we have all this leveraging, Greg. And then you got all the ratings agencies, a AAA rating all of these investment opportunities. So
fraud up and down on the ladder.
Sure.
Yeah. So how can it be valid? How can any of this debt be actually valid on the shoulders of the contracting parties?
Good point.
Excellent point. And the major point about this is this ball of debt is so big. This is why earlier in the program I said, you know, the Federal Reserve basically, you know, pumped out $16 trillion. Why isn't this fixed? Why are we even talking about this? We're on the precipice of an even bigger problem because it wasn't enough money. I mean, the range of what's out there, Martin Armstrong, the economist I was just telling you about, says there's $750 trillion in derivatives. And people have to understand what a derivative is. It is a dark pool. It is a contract over the counter between you and me. And let me compare
with nothing backing it up, right?
Yes. Let me compare it to the Chicago Board of Trade. If you wanted to go buy a bushel of wheat, you'd go to the Chicago Board of Trade. Can somebody stick water in there and make it make weight? No. Can somebody pour if they don't have enough wheat? Give me a scoop of beans and stick it in here. No, they can't do that. Why? It's a public market. There are rules, guarantees, quality standards, oversight. How much is that bushel of wheat? Well, let's see. Bid, ask. It trades every minute of every trading day, and you can get a price. It's called price discovery. Now, let's move over to derivatives. I remember in 08 when I was still working at CNN, I walked into the middle of a meeting at CNN where Fortune magazine was there, CNNmoney.com, all the big wigs, and I said, hey, at the time, BIS, Bank of International Settlements, they say that there's $600 trillion in derivatives out there, and the derivatives are interest rate swaps, mortgage-backed securities, credit default swaps. Those are the kinds of things we're talking about.
Everything.
And I said, where's that traded? And everybody looked at me, and I said, this is not a trick question. Where is that traded? Nobody looked at me. And I said, wow, we're missing a big story. $600 trillion worth of leverage out there traded every day, and we don't know where it's traded. And the answer is, there's no public market. So now, this is a market where there's no guarantees, there are no regulations, there are no standards to what makes a good derivative. It's obviously anything that Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch deems AAA. And no price discovery. They say, oh, these are hard to price. You betcha they are, because there's no price discovery. And if we had price discovery, they'd be worth a whole lot less than what they were sold for. So now we have a big pool of this debt. How much of it's bad? How much of it's good? I don't know. And either do they. And that's the frightening thing about this debt crisis and all the spectrums of the debt crisis. I mean, when you look at MF Global, well, we had $6 billion in debt, but we had 40-to-1 leverage, $240 billion in leverage, a $6 billion move, and poof, they're gone.
You know, the next thing to fall to, I hear, could be this debt for used cars. Have you heard about this?
No, I have not.
This could be huge, where people are defaulting on their used cars. They don't want them. They're getting repoed, and they're selling the debt almost like the way they were selling the mortgages.
Well, our money comes into existence. When you go to the gas station and you swipe your credit card, most people think they borrow money. You do not. You create money. Now, you think about the system we have where the bank says, wow, I'm a bank. I'm going to put out this little plastic card, and I'm going to let George Norrie go to the gas station. You're going to create $50, and then not only are you going to pay me that money that you just created for me back, that becomes mine.
But more. You're
going to pay me interest.
Yep.
Now, why would the banks want to give up this system?
They're going to pay me interest on money I never even paid yet.
That's right. They're going to pay me interest on money they didn't even have.
Yeah.
You created it, and you're responsible for paying that bank, whoever it is, back. That's an unbelievable great system, right? But that's the problem. The problem with our money is that, in effect, it is debt.
It is debt.
That's the problem with our money. And most people can't grasp it. How is money created? It's loaned into existence, by and large.
By the feds.
By the feds. And that's the other thing is that, you know, the Federal Reserve, this is such a scam. You know, Federal Reserve note used to just have a dollar, right? So you had a dollar, and it was created with the power of Congress to print, you know, the coinage act, to print and mint money,
and there was gold backing it up.
Okay.
Right?
And then so, but what the Federal Reserve did was they kind of did an end run. They say, hey, listen, you pay us treasuries, an interest-paying instrument, and we'll give you Federal Reserve notes. They ought to do away with the Fed just because it would be cheaper for Congress to make its own money. Why would we pay somebody an interest-bearing bond for them to turn around and give us a Federal Reserve note? That's a terrible deal.
We outsourced our financial future, didn't we?
Bing, 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 and outsourced our monetary policy to a bunch of private bankers.
Yeah, who are making a fortune.
And listen, incidentally, in that report, that $16 trillion that they pumped out, you talk about in this report, the Government Accountability Office report, there's a conflict of interest, a ton of conflicts of interest. Wow. Isn't that surprising? $16 trillion pumped out, and there was a conflict of interest. You know, there are many different conflicts of interest. They picked winners. They let people fail. They bailed out other people. They let Lehman fail. They bailed out J.P. Morgan Chase. They bailed out Goldman Sachs. They let Bear Stearns be sucked up by J.P. Morgan Chase, and basically they were in failure mode. And so why did they do that? And we can't even audit them. We don't even know what they're doing now. We have no idea what they're going to be doing in the future, but we will know the effects of inflation. And that's coming down. When I first got on the show, I said, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, but here's the one thing I do know that's going to happen. You can pretty much count on inflation. Now, John Williams, I'm going to break a little news here for you. John Williams at shadowstats.com is an Ivy League-trained economist. He's no kook. He works for some of the biggest hedge funds and money people and companies in the world. He gives, you know, because nobody would make a decision on the government's numbers. You'd have to be a complete buffoon idiot. He doesn't tell what his recent client list is, but I'll tell you who some of his past clients are, Chevron and Boeing. Because if you build an airplane and you sell it in 2010 and you deliver it in 2017, you better know how much the cost of labor, steel, what the economy is going to be doing, what the inflation rate is.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, you'd lose your tail.
Yep.
If you're going to build an oil platform in the middle of the Gulf and say, you know, and right now in November 2011, I'm going to build an oil platform. It won't be ready to go until 2017, 16. You better know how much the cost of labor. So that's what John Williams does. So. Here's my breaking news. You know how this yearly deficit is $1.2, $3, $4, $5 trillion?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you know what John Williams has gone through the numbers and what he is projecting it will be?
What?
$5 to $7 trillion annual deficit.
As of
when? $5 to $7
trillion. When?
This year.
This year?
That's what the numbers. We just ended the fiscal year, and that's what he thinks the deficit will come. The real government accountability, the generally accepted accounting practice done by that, not by the government funny, phony numbers.
How much of that is because of Fannie and Freddie Mae?
How much of that is because of the, well, listen, that's Fannie and Freddie Mae have $5.5 trillion or so of mortgage debt in this country. I think this is going to end up costing taxpayers at least a couple of trillion, which incidentally, that's one of the things that came out in the which I was surprised Ron Paul actually got a chance to talk. Now, I'm not, you know, Mr. Ron Paul's proponent, but, you know, he got down to the real brass tacks.
He always does.
Some of these guys were saying, you know, they got their talking points and they know that hot button issues, oh, no more bailouts, but there's no substance there. I've never heard some of these people say, well, I don't think we ought to have any bailouts. Yeah, applause. But Ron Paul's been saying this for a while, and here's where they're bailing them out. They're bailing them out through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I mean, one bank, Bank of America, this year had $127 billion forgiven in possible buybacks, and I think they would have been $127 billion in sour debt Tim Geithner. And then they had $73 billion removed from their books in sour notes by Fannie Mae. Now, that's $200 billion for one bank. Is that a bailout?
Gone.
I'd say yes. And here's the most recent quarter. Most recent quarter, Fannie Mae came out and said to the government, well, we need another $7.8 billion because a third quarter loss.
Yeah, they just came out and said that.
Did you read the report? So part of the money is for losses, and part of the money is for dividends that Fannie
Bonuses
Mae is required
to
pay
give
the
government. That's right.
And they have to borrow money from the government to pay the government back the money they're supposed to pay them. What kind of a world do we live in?
Let's go east of the Rockies, Jeff and Ferguson. Go ahead, Jeff.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Good. Go ahead.
I got a quick, one quick comment and then the question. We bail out Goldman Sachs, but we also have someone who worked for Goldman Sachs on the Supreme Court now. The Justice Kagan.
How about that?
Yeah, and the question is, could these Occupy protests be easily turned into riots by some group to allow the president to declare martial law so there wouldn't be any elections next year?
Anything's possible.
Yeah, they said that about Bush, too, that he was going to, create some kind of a, smokescreen.
Right, he wanted to stay in forever. But
yeah, I don't know.
But anything's possible. You never know.
We live in a crazy world. I mean, just the outright straight facts of what's going on is bizarre.
It is bizarre. It really is.
And that's why I don't get into the whole Bilderberg thing and all that. I'm not saying that doesn't happen. I'm saying I like to go by what I can back up, by what I can source, by what I can say. And, George, what's going on today is so off the charts, so crazy, so cuckooville, that why would I want to even get into speculating about this or that when I can just say, for example—
Talk about real life. But I still think, Greg, that when the dust settles— I think the United States will still be in a strong position, and all these others will be in trouble.
Well, we are a gold superpower. And listen, one of the best things, I think the best deal for Greece is to say, yeah, you know what, we're done. We're not going to pay you. We have to have these austerity measures anyway. And there was one report that said, well, if they do the austerity measures, which they're going to have to do anyway, they immediately lose their debt if they default. Same thing with Italy. If I was the Prime Minister of Italy, I'd be doing the math on that number, four position of three, if you don't count the IMF. I'd be the number three holder of gold. I'd be like, I don't know if I need to pay this back. I think I'll leverage the gold, and I think we're going to go back to the lira.
Exactly.
I mean, think about it.
And we want out of the club.
And we want out of the club.
And we'll do our thing. Greg, stay with us. We're going to come back. We're going to take final phone calls with you. Split show tonight. Later on, we're going to be talking with a group of folks that claim that they went to Mars. Get ready for that. We'll be back. Was there a special government program to go to Mars? And did we go? We'll talk about that next hour on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, by the way, you can become a member of the Coast Insiders Club for less than 25 cents a day. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com and take advantage of the downloads and podcasting and the Coast to Coast mobile apps and all those other great things. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com. Greg, all these news accounts that you and I monitor, this civil unrest that is growing around the planet, what's happening there where this divide becomes more and more extreme and people become more and more upset? At what point does this pressure cooker explode?
I think you're watching the train wreck get faster and faster and more cars pile up. I mean, the Occupy Wall Street, there's some union influence, and there's, they have a mixed message with one of their student loans paid for, and then there's, the Communist Party is involved, who else is trying, the Nazi Party is trying to glom onto this, but at its root, at its heart, I think it's a bunch of people, a lot of young people, there's some old people too, that have woken up and said, hey, we're screwed.
Yeah.
This is not going to be over next year, or the year after, and most people have no savings. Just like
Most people lived like they were never going to have any downtime in the economy. And the last recession we had was, what, 10 months in the early part of the last decade, right at the turn of the century,
mm-hmm.
10 months. So they didn't really have any bearing on how bad things could get. I mean, even in the 70s, we had some pretty rough times, but at least your money was worth something. And that's the paradigm that's changing. You know, one of the things I wrote about early on, I call it the default option. I said we should have only protected the depositors, which that's your capital base. That would cost us max. Protecting everybody in the banks would cost us $6 trillion. Bondholders, shareholders, sorry, you made some bad bets. But we'd be on our way out of this by now. But instead, we made it worse. We amplified it. And then we only bailed out the upper echelon of the public. Even Elizabeth Warren, the Harvard professor who's now running for Senate, you know, she aptly pointed that out. You know, we bailed off out the top and told the bottom half to kiss off, basically.
Yeah.
Excuse me, the bottom 95%. And so, you know, if you had a stock portfolio, the government's supporting my stock. That's the other thing. Yeah, I've been on the radio and other radio stations, and people are like, well, what do you mean? I mean, my stock portfolio is doing great. And I always say, if you're in a market that's supported by the government, I would not feel comfortable there, just like the housing market.
Mm-hmm.
You remember how they got this $8,000, tax credit? My accountant, year and a half ago, said, you ought to buy a house. There's $8,000. And at the time, I remember telling him, I said, hey, Steve, I don't think that the $8,000 is going to be enough to make up for the price drop. Bing. What happened?
Exactly.
People got killed.
Yeah, they sure did.
And now they're sucked into it. They're locked into it, and they're probably upside down. The effective, you were saying that, 30% of the people are underwater, but there was a CNBC story came out and said the effective underwater rate is really higher than that because a lot of people are on the margins, and they have to pay the real estate commission and closing costs to get out of their house and relocation fees, and really they can't move.
They're stuck.
They're stuck.
And they walk. Let's take some final calls. John in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Go ahead, John.
Hey, sorry to change the subject. I was wondering if I can change the subject to the Middle Eastern war that's about to start.
Sure.
To make a long story short, I, through my work, kind of ran into a couple of people through the Israeli intelligence, and a couple of things after I was talking with them that kind of stuck out with me. I was wondering if I can get your opinion. Number one, they were kind of, I'm not really sure if they were really kind of treating the Iranian nuke situation as a more of a decoy, but they were kind of saying more along the lines of Iran was developing was either a biological agent or a chemical agent with a plan to attack Russia under the guise of getting Russia to believe that Israel had attacked Russia. And the Iranians' goal was to draw Israel and America and Russia into a pretty much a big world war.
I was wondering if I can get your opinion on that. What do you think of that one, Greg?
Well, I think that Russia has helped Iran with their nuclear facilities. It could happen. Russia's a big country with nukes. But I tell you, if Israel simply attacks Iran and Iran retaliates, I think Russia, who is big partners with their nuclear program, and they are a trading partner, and China is also a trading partner in terms of their crude oil and refinement and things like that, I think you would have a world war boom right there. I just think things could get out of hand in a hurry. I mean, if they attack, they've already publicly stated that if they are attacked, they're going to attack the U.S. and Europe. Well, there you go.
Are people crazy enough, Greg, to just everyone launch? The Russians launch, China launches, we launch, Israel launches. Everybody
no.
with nukes launch. Are they all that nuts?
No, but Israel has some real fears about Iran, and Iran has, they have long fought a proxy war against Israel. There's a lot of bad blood, a lot of tension, and I think if Israel supposedly has 200 nukes. Now, officially, they have no nukes.
How many you need?
Well, 200 nukes is pretty significant.
Well, that's what I mean. You don't need that many.
You don't need that many, and I don't know if Iran attacks back. I mean, listen, they play war games. They lay this out. If they do this, we'll do this. If they do this, we'll do this. I mean, they've taken this thing down the field pretty far in terms of moves, and so it depends on what Iran's response is. But if Iran lobs
you know, a nuke or a you know, some dirty weapons or you know, biological weapons into Tel Aviv.
Well, they'll have Hezbollah do it.
Well, I, you know, listen, if Hezbollah does that, I think Israel is, they've developed a missile. They've developed a Jericho missile. The problem with flying over there in the past has been, you know, it's over 1,000 miles.
Yeah, that's a poke. But I mean, their jets can make that, though.
Well, yeah, but then that's kind of a, you know, loaded with bombs, flying low under radar around, you know, Iraq. If the Iraqis going to give them airspace, they're going to fly over Turkey. I mean, what are they going to do?
Well, believe me, our missile launching ships have already zoned in on key targets in Iran.
Oh, I think that Iran could get really hurt in this deal. I mean, that doesn't mean that Iran couldn't cause a lot of mischief and couldn't cause a lot of pain for the 7 billion people on this planet, but this could get ugly in a hurry. And the U.S. or Iran is not going to walk away with this completely unscathed.
It might be kind of refreshing, though, to take a hit and get all these hateful countries out of the picture once and for all, wouldn't it? I mean, and there is no doubt Iran has sponsored terrorism. I don't want anybody
anybody
to be foolish enough to say, oh, you know, they don't do anything. I mean, they are a despicable group of people who are running that country. By and large, the Iranian citizens are great people,
nice
people, want a Western way of life. I feel sorry for them. But wouldn't it be nice, Greg, to have no Bashar Assad's in Syria and no mullahs in Iran and just try to create something that's peaceful?
Well, it all depends on how many people have to die for that dream. And so this could be a real, and I'm not trying to be, you know, a wise guy to you or anything else, but this, you cannot understate the threat that this kind of situation could blow up into. I mean, you unleash the dogs of war, and there are wild cards that flop out of the deck.
I think it could amount to a major, major war. I hate to say World War III, but it could.
Well, it's going to go awful fast. This is going to be an internet war. This is not going to be a long, drawn-out, you know, years and years of foot soldiers and, you know, invasion of Europe and Normandy. And oh, no, this is going to be remote-control drones, sub-base missiles, aircraft carriers in a hurry. This missile that Israel has took a lot of time to develop is something that can fly very fast, very low, carry a big payload, and I'm sure they got more than one of them.
Let's go to Leslie in Kennewick, Washington, west of the Rockies. Hey, Les.
Hi.
Hey, welcome.
I wanted to get Greg's comment on something that I had heard. He was saying that no country would collateralize land, and I've heard twice on other radio programs that Hillary Clinton has already collateralized our national lands to China.
Yeah, and I don't know, maybe she did, but boy, that'd be one of the best kept secrets ever, and I just don't know. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I don't like to comment on because I don't have any backing for it. Could have happened, may have happened. I'm not trying to minimize that, but I don't know. I don't know. No country would willingly do it, I'll tell you that.
Let's hope not. Let's go to Columbia, Missouri. Bradley, your turn. First-time caller. Hi, Bradley.
Hey, big fan of the show.
Thank you.
I have this crazy notion that we should take care of the people that are on this planet before we have children and bring more people into the world. And I think that it's because of selfish people in overpopulated countries like China and India, where they can't possibly feed the people that they have there, who think their DNA is so precious that they got to pass it on no matter what. I think it's because of people like that that we're about to have another world war.
Well, it could be.
Now people are going to die in a horrible way.
Greg, isn't China trying to control its population now? They've got some special edicts.
They've been doing that for a while. I mean, they've been doing that for a long time. It's like the strong point about China is its population. The weak point about China is its population.
Population, that's right.
I mean, it's, you know, they got a lot of people to feed. I mean, people think, you know, in the Bible it says that, you know, a country will bring 200 million. Well, that is about the only country that could do that is about China. Well, maybe India. But that's an awful lot of boots to make and a lot of guns to make and a lot of meals to feed. And I'm not so sure that's the way, you know, that's That's like Poland fighting the last war in World War One. You know, after World War One, Poland had the best cavalry in the world, and of course they were fighting the last war, and they were really a match for Germany's mechanized army. And so, you know, I just think that there are some real big wild cards out there, and if we have some kind of a world war, we're already in a terrible economic situation. There could be people starving to death. There are going to be food shortages. There's going to be fuel shortages. There's going to be a lot of things that people are going to be – they're going to wake up and think, what world did I wake up in?
All right, next up, let's go to Duarte, California. Scott, take it away, Scott.
Hi, yes, thank you.
Sure.
Oh, love the guest here. Thank you. I had a question for him, and then if you'll bear with me, I had a statement.
I won't have time for the statement, Scott, so go for the question.
Okay. I just wondered if you felt, I think it's my feeling that all these problems for us began when we were taken off the gold standard, period. I mean,
I agree. I think that was, in theory, what Milton Friedman came up with was that, well, you know, if we keep control of our monetary policy and we don't grow the money too fast, that, you know, things will stay in check. But the problem was we didn't keep things in check. We deregulated everything. We have all these derivatives that the Wall Street did not want to have on a public exchange because they wouldn't have been worth as much. They wouldn't have been able to do what they're doing. And that's the real unseen problem here is all this securitized and derivative debt, all this over-the-counter derivatives, which, you know, that's the reason why we spent trillions of dollars on this, and it's still not fixed. And that's the frightening thing for anybody who's got a pension, for anybody who's saving dollars. That's the frightening thing. The best things to have these days are, a good job, but, a paid-for house with no MERS encumberment. You know, there's 60-some-odd million mortgages in the mortgage electronic registry systems, you know. So there's no paperwork for this stuff. It's just unbelievable the amount of crime and the amount of leverage that has been built up not just in America but in the world. But yes, it's because there was no backing for the money. There was no controls. There was no regulator. There was no way to slow it down. And if there was, we wouldn't have had this. I mean, Brixley Bourne, who was at the CFTC, wanted to regulate derivatives, and she got beat down for that. I mean, Wall Street did not want derivatives regulated. They did not want to have things like Glass-Steagall that would slow them down. They call what they did financial innovation, and I blame both Democrats and Republicans for this fiasco that we have. They were bought off by the special interest. They were bought off by the financial interest in this country, and they got what they wanted, and look at the mess we're in. And now they want to put this on the backs of every person in the world to make up for the mess that they've created, and I just don't think it's going to work.
I got to tell you, though, Greg, as strange as it seems, I can't think of a better time to be alive on this planet, to watch these events unfold and to become part of this, and to do whatever we can to keep things fixed.
There's going to be great opportunity. In my site, I just try to warn people, and I try to give them solid advice. And, you know, I don't like to be a survivalist, but, you know, hey, listen, if you have, some food stored away, if you don't have enough money to buy gold or silver, then get your house in order. Car fixed. Get new tires. They're never going to be cheaper. You know, maybe go out and buy yourself a few bags of rice and have some water on hand. You should have some emergency food. Have some batteries. If things don't get bad, hey, you can give the stuff to a food
shelter.
You know, cupboard, or you can always eat it. You can give it to charity. But, you know, it's cheap insurance. And so I just want people to – the big takeaway is don't give up. Preparing. Stop preparing.
We've got Greg in Clearwater, Florida. Greg, you're on with Greg. Go ahead. Welcome to the show.
George, I love you, man. You're just such a breath of fresh air, and I got to get this real quick.
Okay.
Greg, remember a TV station in Tampa? And I'll just say very, very quickly, Snake Bite?
Yes, I got bit by a six-foot rattlesnake in Tampa. Yes.
Right,
you did?
Right. Well, Greg, you probably don't remember me, but I was a photographer there.
Oh, hey, Brian.
And
what's your last name?
His name's Greg.
Greg, but I can't give you my last name. But anyway, terrific work. I listened to a Richard Wolff, professor of economics at Amherst, I think.
Yep.
Who spelled out this the last 30 years so eloquently. Well, anyway, my situation was the television station I worked for came to me and basically said, "We want you to leave." So they paid me for 10 months, and so goodbye. And I'm over 60 now. There's no way I can work back in that field. I'm a musician on the side, and I invested my money. Both my wife and I saved. We got through 2007 okay, but this next one, I mean, it just scares me to death.
What are you invested in?
What the heck do you do? Because I'm invested all with a local brokerage firm here, and I'm on a fixed income, and I'm unemployable now. I mean,
and you're too young for Social Security, right? Yeah.
Yes. Well, I filed for that. I got that. But, you know, Social Security is pathetic. I mean,
well, listen, I have people who have written me on the site. I'll tell you what people have told me. I had people write me on the site in the last couple of years and said, hey, 2 years ago or 3 years ago or a year ago, I sold my 401k or my IRA. I paid the tax and penalty, and I went right into the precious metals market.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people did that.
And everybody who did that, you know, they did a couple of things. They gained
or they transferred it, or they didn't even sell it. They transferred it over. You can do that.
Well, yeah, but I don't like GLD. I don't like XLV. I don't like any of the paper funds. I mean, physical gold and silver.
Oh, you like to hold it, huh?
Well, because the physical funds really kind of defeat the purpose.
You better have a safe.
You can buy miners, but you really need to do your homework. All that to say this, you don't realize how encumbered your accounts are. And, you know, there are big brokerage firms that commingle your accounts, like MF Global. And you have to ask for a book entry. And if your broker says, what's that? The next two words out of your mouth should be, you're fired.
Or goodbye.
Oh, yes. And that means that when it's a book entry, it's held in your name. Yes, I know you get a statement and your stocks have your name and you have this many stocks, but that doesn't mean it's held in your name at the brokerage.
That's true. Greg, we're out of time. I want to thank you. Greg Hunter, USAWatchdog.com. Go up to his website. Take a look at the things that he writes on a regular basis. He's got his finger on the pulse. And we shall be back now with more on Coast to Coast AM.